Intrigue, resentment, and accusations of elitism. Try writing a children's book about that. Plenty of disgruntled authors, both in Australia and abroad, argue that there's an underlying philosophy of snobbery amongst judges of children's literature awards. Part of the problem is that the books which tend to win the top prizes aren't necessarily the ones children want to read. But is there anything wrong with judges focusing on the highbrow end of the market, or should popularity play a part in their decisions? A confidential report commissioned by the Children's Book Council of Australia suggests that the time might be right to overhaul Australia's top children's literature award. For the book show, James Panicki investigated the world of children's literary prizes and discovered that it's not all fun and games. Kids Lit authors Melina Marchetta, Andy Griffiths, James Maloney and children's writing expert Mike Shuttleworth begin this report with their say.
I have to say there are some fantastic books out there that sell well, and there are a lot of books out there that sell well that are not of literary merit. So, you know, where do you draw the line?
I'm not sure what the qualifications are of the judges, whereas you're dealing with complex stuff here, and humour is very complex. And writing for kids is actually very complex, and I'm not sure if these people are practitioners themselves.
I think they've done more for reading than any number of awards, because they're producing books that kids want to read and get kids excited about reading, about stories, about language.
The judging panel, they're all wonderful people who put in enormous hours and are very dedicated to the task, but they all look pretty much the same. I mean by that, their background, where they've come from, and therefore you're going to end up with similar kinds of choices every year.
It's a tough world, Kids Lit. Tough for struggling writers desperate to earn a living, and tough for the librarians who have to sift through hundreds of books as they attempt to bring their students the best on offer. It's little wonder, therefore, that literary awards can mean so much. Besides the kudos of winning a prestigious prize, appearing on an awards shortlist also guarantees good sales to libraries and schools. And there's a reason for that. Librarians use the lists as a guide when deciding which books to put on the shelves, or even when the books are really special, under lock and key in those glass cases. As a result, judging books for children's awards can be a minefield, and one which an international example suggests can quickly become ideologically fraught. Case study number one, the Newbery. That's the award which in the United States has become synonymous with publishing success in children's literature. Anita Silvey is an American children's book expert.
Suddenly one day your books are selling 3,422 copies, and you know, then you win the award and you sell all of that. Obviously the author's other books come along with it, and this book then goes out, and that's just in hardcover, by the way, and paperback sales sometimes, you know, in the half a million when the book is launched in paperback. Teachers look at the Newberries in the United States to bring what they want to bring in their classroom to teach. School libraries are there, and then anyone who's interested in books wants to know what everyone thinks, you know, is the best book for children.
In other words, it's the ka-ching moment. Win a Newbery and your career will take off. But according to research carried out by Anita Silvey, the mere mention of the word Newbery is enough to elicit groans of derision from many a school librarian from Alabama to Alaska. Writing in the School Library Journal last year, Ms. Silvey suggested that the scepticism is a result of the changing identity of the award.
As I talked about in my article, there was a vast difference between the kind of books they were hunting for in the 1990s, by the way, all very successful Newberries, and the sort of books that they had been hunting for recently. I don't really know what the shift was. I mean, I never really got a handle on why it had gone that way. It just seemed, as I looked at the awards over a 20-year period, it seemed to me that the choices were moving in the direction of books for a narrower and narrower and narrower audience. And I mean that both with children and with the gatekeepers who could use it, with children.
And one good example of that, which you've pointed out, is the 2008 winner, which was a book called Good Masters, Sweet Ladies. Tell me something about that.
I always hate to disparage the books because, you know, it's truly not the book's fault. I mean, that book does very well what it sets out to do. But what it sets out to do is to create a kind of medieval Chaucerian play. And if you're, you know, if you're in a private school and you in sixth grade, you do medieval Chaucerian plays, it's you couldn't get a better book than that. But, of course, that's a very narrow taste in a book. And there are a lot of people in a lot of situations for whom that's not even anything on the radar for them or their children.
Anita Silvey's article, which was picked up by the Washington Post, refers to one librarian as saying that she had no interest in learning, quote, what unreadable Newbery the Library Committee was going to foist on us this year, end quote. The not-so-subtle subtext is one of elitism, that while the adult judges may love books which challenge young readers, the young readers themselves may prefer a very different fare. Ms. Silvey's article sparked a national debate over just how prescriptive the Newbery needed to be. Luckily, that's not the type of debate we need to have in Australia. Or is it? If you want to get a sense of the kind of stories that are not winning children's literature awards in Australia, you can't do better than this. This is author Andy Griffiths reading a story from his Just Stupid book.
Chill out, man, says the hippie. He turns back to the map and studies it carefully. Says here the toilets are at M16 on level 2. What level are we on now, I say. Level 3, he says, squinting at the map. No, hang on, level 1. Whoops, make that level 4. Level 4, I say, there's no such level. Hey, man, says the hippie, open your mind. There are many levels, more levels than you ever dreamed of. Are you insane, I say? Relax, he says. Take it easy. I can't, I yell. I'm busting. I've got to get to a toilet, quick. No, man, you're missing the point, he says. The destination's not important. The journey is where it's at. Not when you're busting, it's not, I say.
And haven't we all been there before? Andy Griffiths is Australia's most popular children's author. He's won 6 Children's Choice Reading Awards, awards where young readers get to call the shots. His Just books, as in Just Tricking or Just Shocking, have sold over 1 million copies in Australia. Worldwide, he's sold over 4 million books, a success he owes in no small part to his title, The Day My Bum Went Psycho, although you'll be pleased to know that the word bum was translated as ass in the US version. So Andy Griffiths has made it as a children's author, yet none of his books have picked up an award from the Children's Book Council of Australia. That's the most important award for children's literature in the country. And that fact hasn't gone unnoticed by Andy Griffiths.
I do know that when I sit down to write a story, audience appeal is number one on my list. And I will use all of my my talent. You know, it depends who you are as whether you think I have any. But I'll use all of that to tell them a story that's going to grab them and give them a wild ride and leave them gasping at the end going, wow, that was fantastic. I want more of that. That's my aim. They are on record as having said audience appeal is only a minor consideration in our criteria.
So the fact that your books are selling particularly well and have sold internationally as well, that is not necessarily a consideration for them.
It appears to be not what they're looking for in their award.
Should it be a consideration for them? I mean, should the incredible success of books like yours play a part in their decision?
Well, I would hope they would take any book on its merits. But I'm aware that adults do prefer more complex plots, more complex themes in their own reading, and I'm certainly in that too. But a child is not necessarily ready for that level of complexity. And to get onto a child's wavelength often involves simplification, to the point where an adult might come along and think there's nothing much going on here.
That criticism that adult judges prefer complexity even when it makes the books less accessible is what has driven the Newbery controversy in the United States. Mike Shuttleworth is the program manager at the Centre for Youth Literature at the State Library of Victoria. He followed the recent Newbery debate and has read the 2008 winner, Good Masters, Sweet Ladies.
I think it's a beautiful book, and I would think that any publisher would be very proud to have published that book. It's a series of dramatic monologues that really bring to life the experience, the feel, the details of life of a medieval village, and beautifully produced and illustrated. So I would think it's a highly appealing book. I just think kids need to be given the chance to experience it.
The suggestion, though, was that books of that kind are relatively inaccessible and they really require the assistance of an adult, and that makes those books, by definition, elitist. That's not an opinion that you'd buy into?
No, not at all. And I think there's certainly a lot of interest in books that do challenge readers. Another American example is a book called Octavian Nothing. It has a much longer title, but let's just call it Octavian Nothing by M.T. Anderson. And there are two volumes of that book. That's another one that people said, well, you know, teenagers that I know are just not going to go near that. There are a lot of young people who have loved that book and commented on it very positively.
Mike Shuttleworth says he's a fan of more accessible children's books, including those written by Andy Griffiths. The question, though, is whether those books actually need the official recognition of winning a prize.
Look, I think Andy and people like him, Paul Jennings over the years, Maurice Gleitzman, Emily Rodder, they don't always win awards. Emily Rodder certainly did with the Rowan of Rin series and perhaps one or two others. I think they've done more for reading than any number of awards because they're producing books that kids want to read and get kids excited about reading, about stories, about language. Prizes aren't the be-all and end-all, and very few writers would set out to write a book in order to collect the gong at the end.
Yet that's small comfort for Andy Griffiths. He argues that the accessibility of books, their ability to get bums or asses on library seats, can't be overlooked by those judging kids lit.
I would look at the research which suggests that readers who go on to develop literary discrimination are, without exception, high-volume readers. The only way you develop a scale of what's good and what's bad is to read enough so that you have to create those categories. So the first thing we draw from this is that a child needs books around them in the home to pick up when they're ready. The second thing is that the actual quality of those books is immaterial. They just need to read. And Professor Cole, you know, Melbourne's own revolutionary thinker, more than 100 years ago, realised to get kids to read, make it pleasurable. You know, make them laugh, and that's the whole rationale for the Cole's funny picture books.
Sure. In other words, once they've started reading and they are familiar with the process, they can then go on to make those decisions and to be a bit more discerning.
Yeah, and I would hope that's where you have an adult or a librarian or a teacher who can say, well, I see you've read 3,000 Enid Blyton books now and you're starting to figure the characters are lacking a bit of dimension. How about you try this one? And that's how we go on. Mm. But all good readers have been phase readers. We've all had a phase of Enid Blyton, nothing but, until we're sick of it and then move on. So it seems very logical to me that the first thing we have to do if we're going to create readers for the future and keep reading alive as a you know, vital pastime and not a curiosity, is to put books into their hands that they go, wow, that is a great book. And that's not easy to do. They're not easy to write.
Australian author Andy Griffiths. On the book show today, we're taking a look at the awards war. Should prizes for children's literature focus on quality or popularity, or indeed should the two be seen as the same thing? Sydney-based Melina Marchetta has won her fair share of prizes both in Australia and abroad. She's taken home two CBCA awards in the older readers category for her novels Looking for Alibrandi and Saving Francesca. Both books had sold very well even before the official recognition. And earlier this year, she made it big in the States by winning the Michael L. Prinz Award. That's by far the most prestigious American prize for writers of fiction, which targets the 12 to 18 age bracket. Her book, which was published in the US with the title Jellicoe Road, was described as an off-the-radar favourite of the American judges. She argues that while popularity and quality aren't mutually exclusive, strong sales don't always make for a book worthy of a literary prize.
The criteria is about popularity. You could imagine the ones that are selling well would win, but that's not what the criteria is about. And one of the interesting things that came up at the Sydney Writers Festival when Margot Lanigan and Tobin Anderson, both of them honour books for the Prince, and Mal Pete was speaking, was that no one ever says, why hasn't Dan Brown won the Booker? You know, it's just, it's almost as if when it comes to kids, there's, you know, all this massive debate about who should win and who shouldn't win. So, you know, Tobin Anderson's book, Octavia Nothing, it's a really sophisticated book, and there's always this argument that, you know, kids are not going to be able to access it, and, you know, it's not a popular one. Now, you know, when something sells 100,000 copies, then it you know, that's both popular and it's of literary merit. So I just think that too many people probably get caught up in the idea of, you know, if kids are reading it, it should win awards. But there's a criteria with awards. And I have to say there are some fantastic books out there that sell well. And there are a lot of books out there that sell well that are not of literary merit. So, you know, where do you draw the line? Is it about popularity? And I think that there are probably enough awards out there chosen by kids where they are choosing the books that they love. But probably what's happening is that they're not the big awards like the Caldecott or the Newbery or the Prince or even the Children's Book Council one. So I think it all does come down to criteria.
Yet the criteria of children's literature awards and the way in which the judges interpret those criteria are part of the controversy. Andy Griffith says he's no fan of those choosing the winners.
I'm not sure what the qualifications are of the judges, but I think it's drawn from the actual CBCA membership. Whereas you're dealing with complex stuff here, and humour is very complex. Writing for kids is actually very complex, and I'm not sure if these people are practitioners themselves or, so I would want to know what those qualifications are.
And Andy Griffiths isn't alone in that assessment. James Maloney won two CBCA awards in the late 1990s. We can reveal that last year he was asked by the CBCA executive to co-author a report looking at the Children's Book Council's awards. And he came up with a comprehensive blueprint for reform, which included scrapping the five categories. When approached by the book show, James Maloney said he preferred not to refer directly to the report, which remains confidential, but he was happy to discuss his personal concerns about the awards.
The judging panel, they're all wonderful people who put in enormous hours and are very dedicated to the task, but they all look pretty much the same. I mean by that, their background, where they've come from, and therefore you're going to end up with similar kinds of choices every year.
By background, do you mean professional background or ethnic or cultural background? What are you talking about?
Oh, well, if you're looking at issues of ethnic background, yes, they do tend to be of a certain type. They tend mostly to be women. And people of, yes, same working background. There are a lot of teacher librarians, a lot of public librarians, a lot of academics in the field. Some people who've been judges two and three times, which tends to take you back, I think. I think you should be looking forward and not inviting people onto judging panels when they've had a go 10 or 12 years ago. And we were talking about, well, why aren't humorous books given better of a chance, sci-fi, some of the genre that are really being developed and explored, well, maybe that's how you get rid of some of those prejudices, by inviting people onto the panel who don't carry those prejudices from many years before, or who come from a different reading experience, and you might get a few more edgy and exciting, adventurous choices if you were to change the nature of the judging panel.
Yet while James Maloney acknowledges that not all recent winners have had broad appeal, he says that lowering standards shouldn't be an option.
I think that the Children's Book Council Awards is our children's book world's equivalent of the Miles Franklin Award. They're there to celebrate quality literature, not popular literature. And is anyone suggesting that the Miles Franklin lower its standards so that the general public finds the winners more accessible? And I don't hear that very often. I look, I have to confess that a couple of the Miles Franklin winners over the years have defeated me, but on the whole, the ones I have read have been wonderful reads. And it's a bit easy to forget that at the Children's Book Council Awards, books like Looking for Ella Brandy was a winner, so was Playing Beady Bow, so was, I mean, John Marston's So Much to Tell You. I think at one stage they reckoned just about every teenage girl in the country had read it. No, it was a winner. If it comes down to sales, then look at the kinds of books that end up on the top 10 children's list, and they tend to be the same names all the time. And while they can be lots of fun, they are also, in my opinion, can be fairly shallow in their look at life. I don't think they challenge the young reader in any way. And the Children's Book Council exists to promote, not highbrow, I don't like that word, but they certainly exist to promote books that do provide those challenges, that do make children think in the same way that the best adult literature, whether it's popular or not, the best adult literature is what grabs you and makes you think.
The CBCA says it's examining James Maloney's report, although National President Marge Kirkland, who is a teacher librarian in Brisbane, believes the council is unlikely to make major changes. Ms Kirkland says that part of the problem is the sheer size of the judge's job, with awards given in five separate categories of children's literature.
I suppose the judges, who are chosen one for every state and territory of Australia, are mainly teacher librarians. When I looked through the list of who was judges at the moment, there were seven teacher librarians, two booksellers, two academics, and one shire librarian. Many of them review books and have specialist literature qualifications. The judging process is open for everybody to put in a submission to be a judge, and the judges are chosen independently of each other in each state. But many authors would not have the time to read the great number of books. The fiction judges, for example, read over 370 books this year.
And that can become a full-time job, can't it?
Yes, it can be.
I wonder if there's anything that can therefore be done to make judging more attractive to a writer who might have an interest in these things.
Well, it could have been broken up so that there were judges for particular awards, say for only one of the categories, which is how it is with the Eve Pownall Awards. However, we haven't had a lot of interest from authors to be judges.
The other criticism is that perhaps the judges don't come from a sufficiently broad background. For example, not enough judges from non-English speaking backgrounds or Indigenous backgrounds or different social classes, for example. Is that criticism fair?
It perhaps is fair, but those people obviously haven't applied to be judges.
And as the debate bubbles away in Australia, it appears that critics of the Newbery Award in the United States have received what Americans may describe as closure. This year, the Newbery went to British writer Neil Gaiman and his dark collection of stories called The Graveyard Book. It's writing that's both popular and critically acclaimed, something which Anita Silvey says augurs well for the award's future.
Basically, what I suggested when I wrote the article was to say, take a look at the Newberries that have really been the most successful books. You know, read them, think about them. They're books like A Wrinkle in Time, books like Lois Lowry's The Giver. These are both, by the way, science fiction titles. Look at what has worked over time, the books that we love when we talk about the award to bring out and get excited about, and to try to find a book that fit into that model rather than a book that fit into the literary but sort of small audience model.
Well, do you think the Newbery judges may have taken into account some of the criticism that had been levelled against them, not necessarily just by you, but by a wide range of writers and publishers in the US?
I think that what they did was cast their net a little more widely in terms of the kinds of books that they were looking at because of the criticism. And then, of course, at the end of the day, you know, theories of books don't win awards, books win awards. And I think all they needed was to have a book like The Graveyard Book on the table, and, you know, his genius really did the rest.
American children's literature expert Anita Silvey there, ending that report from the book show's James Panicki. And on the book show tomorrow, we're going to take you to an enchanting place, back to the medieval Middle East and that centuries-old tale, The Arabian Nights. Having changed the world on a scale unrivaled by any other literary text, we'll take a close look at the book's historical and cultural influence and its vigorous afterlife in the contemporary world. You'll be fascinated to know that there was no Aladdin or Ali Baba in the original tales. And we're in the kitchen with author Monica Ali as well. You can hear this program again tonight at 8 o'clock, but if you're listening in the evening, go to the website. You know the drill. That's where the podcast is, and guest and book details for today. That's all for the book show today. I'm Ramona Koval on ABC Radio National. Coming up, First Person.